Welcome to the People of Portland and Beyond, episode 44. Today in studio with me is Arsenio77 from Instagram. How are you doing today?
Doing pretty well, thanks. How you doing?
Pretty good. It got really warm in Portland suddenly, huh?
It did, yeah. It's pretty hot.
Yeah. Suddenly you don't need to wear a jacket at all and sweating all the time.
Yeah.
It was raining for a few weeks ago, too, for a while. Now we're in the dry season, somewhat.
Yeah, come with it.
Yeah.
Ready for them flip-flops.
Yeah. Do you like to go on any beaches around Portland?
Go on what?
To any beaches around Portland.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, not necessarily around Portland, but I like to hit up the coast when it's hot like this. Me and everybody else who escapes for the weekend.
Nice.
Try and get out early, though, so I don't have angry dad syndrome.
Mm-hmm. How many kids do you have?
I actually don't have any kids, but I have an accumulative of about 13, I think, nieces and nephews.
Wow, that's a lot. That's yeah. A lot of gifts.
It's a lot of kids.
Do you have to get 13 presents every birthday and every Christmas and every Easter?
I probably should, but I'm not financially robust enough to do that, unfortunately.
Yeah, I hear you.
Try and space it out throughout the year so they still know that I care, even when it's the holidays.
Yeah. And what do you do for a living?
I slang dope. I work for an extract company called Peak Extracts that produces medicated chocolates, salves, cartridges, and tinctures.
Nice. Do you partake as well?
I do.
What are some of your favorites?
Right now, one of my favorite go-tos is Gelato 33 in the form of flour from Nelson & Co. Mm-hmm. From our brand, I pretty much consume all of it, but my go-to right now is our Platinum Girl Scout Cookies medicated chocolate. Pretty heady, and it's technically a hybrid chocolate, so the effects are kind of relaxing in the body, but also sort of cerebral, which I find...
So some sativa?
Yeah, it has some sativa crossed in it, Durban Poison specifically. That's one of my favorite flower strains as well, and I find it to be very, very creative or creative enhancing, so it's kind of a go-to for me.
Do you remember the first one you've ever tried?
Man.
Because, like, if you're from the East Coast, you can't really say what it was.
Yeah, I mean, the first weed I ever tried. No, you know, I think knowing what you're trying is relatively new.
Right, exactly.
I moved out to the East Coast for about 5 years, and when I came back, there was this flourishing medical market, and that was the first time that I was really able to hone in on the effects that I truly liked and could count on.
Yeah.
And the first strains that I tried when I got back, one was called Northern Lights was one, and Durban Poison was another.
Okay.
And then there was one that was bred out here called Mount Hood Magic, which is a Northern Lights and I want to say Amnesia Haze or no, Durban Poison Cross.
Yeah.
And it typically has a high potency level of THC. Yeah, nice. those were the first go-tos. Oh, and Hindu Kush was another one, which is like super sedative and
couch lock.
Yeah.
Mm. And at Peak Extracts, do you ever foresee the extraction process?
Yeah, I observe. I mean, it's a pretty small space, so I see it on a daily basis. It's a full spectrum CO2 extract.
Do you know the science behind it?
In sort of layman's terms.
Explain it in the layman's terms.
Our extractor, we use CO2 because of its limited impacts on the environment. Some of the other hydrocarbons have a lot more waste involved.
Yeah.
Process is proprietary, so I can't go into too much detail, but what I can tell you is that the way we process it is at a slow temperature for a long period of time.
Mm-hmm.
And that allows us to process a lot of the terpene content, because a lot of the benefits that you experience with cannabis are directly related to the terpenes and the types of terpenes, and also the other microcannabinoids that are involved in cannabis. So you mentioned CBN earlier.
Yeah, I did.
And with our process, we end up getting some of those other microcannabinoids. So CBN, sometimes we get CBC or CBG, or even a very, very low, depending on the strain, concentration of THC. So for people who don't want to feel foggy or have any of those psychoactive effects, we have those products available. Yeah, exactly. And we started in the medical market, so that's always been part of our focus in the rec market. One of the founders is a certified Chinese herbalist, and she started creating this product to help her deal with her Crohn's disease.
Nice.
And so that will always be sort of part of our ethos and how we approach the processing of cannabis related products.
Yeah. So you have high CBD, high CBN, all that stuff.
Yeah. Extracts. It depends on the strain.
Harlequin is one of the high CBD strains.
Yep. Harlequin's a high CBD strain. There are quite a few these days. And then there's also, strains that have mixed ratios.
1-to-1 is being touted as even better than high CBD right now, right?
Yeah, it is, because the thing that I think that gets lost in the normalizing chemical compound of CBD is that in order for your brain to receive the CBD effectively, you have to have a certain percentage of THC entering your endocannabinoid system.
Mm.
And so we do some stuff that has, 30-to-1 or 2-to-1 or 1-to-1, but it also depends on what we're able to source at the time of our production and what our needs are at that time.
Are certain strains only around during certain seasons?
I wouldn't say it's so much seasonal as it is the grower's preference on what they have in their arsenal at that time.
Do they grow based on demand, I would suppose?
Yeah, some do based off of demand that they've created. So one of our partners that we work really closely with, Yerba Buena, does a lot of developing of their own genetics. So one strain that we get, actually a couple strains we get from them, being Corazon and CBD Kush, they'll have in their mix periodically, but not all the time.
Mm. Have you ever tried to grow yourself?
I have not.
It's really, really hard.
I've seen it throughout the course of my employment in the cannabis industry. I used to work at a farm that did no-till growing and didn't use pesticides. They used
no pests. Neem oil, I would suppose, then? Because pests are the number one problem for me. Like, when I tried years ago, the flowering stage, it would just be like every bug ever would want it.
Yeah, well, and now that there's so many growers in Oregon, the bug population has been allowed to flourish. So they used predatory insects to control any sort of pesticide outbreak or pest outbreak.
Okay. Hopefully those are contained.
Well, yeah. So the place that I worked had these really, really state-of-the-art greenhouses, and
they put the bugs in the greenhouse so they don't even get out. Wow. Yeah.
And a lot of cases, if the pests weren't there, they would just, you know, fly away. So like there was a aphid problem that we had at the time, and I didn't even know that this was possible, but you can get these predatory wasps that the way they procreate is inserting into the aphid.
Yeah, I think I read about that once.
And if there's no aphids, they just fly away. But if there are aphids, then they will eradicate the aphids pretty fast.
So you're saying the pest problem occurs more in a contained space. Is that what you're saying?
Not necessarily. I don't know enough about the pest to make that assertion. But with these wasps in particular, because they're a greenhouse, if the aphids were gone, they would just find a way out of the greenhouse.
Yeah. I have a community garden space right by Forest Park, and I never had a pest problem over there. Yet, when I've grown in my garden box on the roof a few years ago, there was an aphid problem. When I've tried growing indoors, there's always some kind of like gnat problem or something, you know?
Yeah.
Indoors, from my perspective, you got to get the plants out within a certain amount of time or the bugs are just going to come.
Yeah. Well, and so this particular aphid, I think that we experienced was called a banger aphid.
Okay.
And they would attack when the bud was at its juiciest. So just like you're saying, as soon as it was like, wow, this is stacking, this looks like the fucking chronic, yeah, these aphids would be like, yeah, we agree.
Right. And as far as your Instagram, you mainly put your art on there?
Yes.
When did you start doing art?
Well, my dad would say I started when I was 3, but I consciously remember about 5 or 6-ish I started drawing, started taking lessons for painting when I was 12 or 13, I think.
So you were classically trained?
I was, yes. Nice.
So you know what mistakes you can make because you learn from the professionals.
It's true.
Do you believe in that philosophy?
I believe in the happy mistake. Yeah. Especially when it comes to water soluble mediums. Yeah. I think that some of the beauty in that work is the way it can dry and change when it dries.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, sometimes you just make a mistake at the beginning and the art sucks and you got to throw it away.
Where do you get your influences from?
People, I think, mostly. I find people to be fascinating. And the resilience that people can endure in the way of sacrifice or hardship is inspiring to me.
Yeah.
Music also is pretty inspiring to me. It's been sort of a part of my life since day one.
I've always rooted for the underdog. I just tend to do that. Do you?
I do.
Yeah. Even if it's my home team, I remember when I was a kid, I'm just like, but they're crushing them. I want the other team to come. Sometimes I would feel that way.
I never went that far, but
I don't know. I just like,
but I root for the underdog.
I would just be like, maybe if it's a closer game, it would be more exciting for me to watch at least. I still want them to win at the last second.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't condone it, though, because growing up, one of my social studies teachers told me that in Japan, the way they play baseball is they aim for a tie, and I still can't believe it to this day. What do you think of that?
They aim for a tie. Well, I suppose that's respectful. That seems in line with Japanese culture.
Mm. And this picture right here with the chocolate pieces, what is that from?
So that is the chocolate we use to process our edibles. It's 70% dark chocolate. We use very limited ingredients, so it's vegan and gluten-free, and all of the products are strain-specific. Mm-hmm. And they're color-coded so the consumer can know consistently what they're getting themselves into when they purchase our products.
I see. And you owe like someone a bottle of wine, apparently?
Oh, what's that? Do you have
Kate
a bottle?
Black Art says you owe a bottle of wine.
Oh shit, Kate! I owed Kate a bottle.
Thinking
of wine.
Thinking $50 to $75.
I don't know. I think she owes me bottles of wine.
Okay.
She's one of the owners, so. All
right.
You heard it here first, Kate. You owe me a bottle of wine.
And what medium? Like, how do you like to work? Basically, with what materials on what?
So most consistently these days I'm working with watercolor, walnut ink, and just regular ink. Mm-hmm. And I'm working that way because historically I've worked mostly with oils, and I can spend months if not years on oil paintings. Whereas walnut ink, watercolors, anything water soluble, really, even acrylics for that matter, are much more immediate than the oil paintings. And also the oil paintings I do are really large, so they cost a lot of money and they take a long time. And
yeah,
with oils, you build up the layers and there's a level of transparency that you're working with. Mm-hmm. Similar to watercolors, but since watercolors can dry in about 5 to 10 minutes, I can carry them with me everywhere. So whenever the mood strikes me, I can just, you know, bust out a painting.
Nice. You like spicy foods?
I do like spicy foods.
Is this your favorite kind of sauce? How do you pronounce that?
Prosser spice?
Yeah.
It is one of my favorite types of sauce. Shout out to Chris Prosser and Prosser Spice.
What are you making in this dish?
I am making some El Pastor street tacos.
Nice. So you saw a dish on the street and you're like, I want to make that at home.
Yeah, exactly.
You're the first guest that I asked that, and I didn't even have to ask. It kind of just came about because I've done that myself. Angelina's Greek Heroes on First. I've wanted to make that the way they do. Cannot do it. Like, they get this special pita. I don't know where they get it from.
Ooh.
Like, you can't get that from the supermarket. So.
Is it house made? Is it over, like, stones or something?
I don't know, man. They might order it just from a bakery to order for the day or whatever. Because they're just open 4 hours a day on the weekdays. So.
Oh, shit.
And then they're open for the whole weekend, basically, at Portland Saturday Market. That's where their bread and butter is.
So are they over there on Stark Street?
You know where the train on First? Basically right by, you know where the Floyd's Coffee is? It's like right across the street from Floyd's on 3rd or 1st. Yeah.
I can't say that I do.
Yeah, the MAX train comes basically over the bridge and then it does like a left. And it goes past the Portland Saturday Market.
Oh, okay.
And it's like right around that area, right before the Portland Saturday Market.
Okay, yeah, I know that area.
Yeah, it's pretty run down, so most people don't go around there, but if you're ever over there, Angelina's.
It's a lot of history over there. A lot of jazz clubs come and gone, like Key Largo, I think, was right over there for many years, and Ohm, is that right?
I'm not sure.
I think so.
Okay.
Well, it took the place of Key Largo, but I think it was called Ohm, which was owned by Dan Reed, I want to say, formerly of the Dan Reed Network. He did a Blazers song.
Nice.
Yeah. Back when, actually, similarly to performance now of the Blazers, where they're in the finals multiple years in a row.
Did you watch the game?
I didn't.
I heard about it. I was playing a show of live music, and no one came, and they're like blaming it on the last playoff game.
Yeah, that can really stifle an artist's performance, the Blazers.
Yeah, there's four artists and one from California. was quite rude, but I'm not going to mention his name. He's from California.
The artist from California was quite rude.
Yeah. He was just like moody. I don't know. I think I saw him sniff a little something. So maybe it's just like a drug thing or something.
Yeah.
But like, he was just not wanting to talk.
Anxiousness.
Yeah, it could just like, I was just being, I don't know what was going on, but I was being free and open, and I just like went up to him to talk to him at his table. And you know that feeling you get when you walk up to somebody and they look at you and you just could tell like they want you to get the fuck out of there like right away. And
yeah,
that's what I got from him. So I'm like, well, you don't even want to hear what I say. You just don't want to talk to anybody right now.
Do you find that to be commonplace with communication with between artists?
I hadn't played a bar show like that in forever. Mm-hmm. So I didn't really know what to expect. But the other two artists were really cool. So I think it was just him. It might have been his whole, I'm traveling and I came into this bar and no one's here. I think that's what I whittled it down to. But either way, when I go out, I just try to be friendly, especially to other artists that are kind of where I'm coming from, you know?
Yeah.
And he had long hair. I like, we had enough in common where I'm like, you don't want to talk.
You don't want to brush our hair together.
Yeah, right. So yeah, I don't know, some artists can be really cool and some are moody and completely antisocial, which I can understand because I'm antisocial a lot. But
yeah,
when I go out, I just put myself in the mode to at least talk to other people or be open to talking to other people, you know?
Yeah,
especially as an artist when you're selling yourself.
Well, absolutely, there's a lot more working against us as artists than there is for us these days. I mean, take it down to just elementary school, like it's a lost practice these days. It's really kind of sad, I think.
Yeah, plus you're losing out on networking opportunities when you do that.
Absolutely.
I think I messaged him on Instagram seeing if he wanted to do the show and nothing, and you know, based on his response at the show, I wasn't gonna say you want to come do a podcast.
Yeah.
Which you could have got some promotion.
Yeah,
so it's a shame. You gotta be
you're
open.
Lost, bitch.
Yeah. Or is Lucy agrees with that.
Lucy does. Meow, meow.
Do you have any pets?
I do. I have a really anxious Dachshund Beagle mix who is very, very sweet and needy. And if we don't feed him on time, he howls and whines. And if we show up late, he'll take a piss on the carpet. He's a very sweet dog. I'm sure you could find some footage.
Is this one of his paintings?
No, that's not him. That's the owner of Nelson & Co.'s dog.
Where'd you get the inspiration for this?
Well, I think I painted that over President's Day weekend. And I'm always sort of fascinated by art's evolution over time, and a way that a lot of artists were able to make a living in oil painting for quite some time now is from presidential paintings. And
really?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting to see how presidential paintings have evolved over time too. I mean, I can't remember the statistic now, but Barack Obama and Michelle Obama's paintings had increased attendance through their viewership by quite a bit. But this is based off of, I want to say, one that I found of maybe Thomas Jefferson or something like that. And it's like, you know, you're trying to make them look very, very majestic and smart. So, of course, there's books in the background and then, you know, like an expensive looking tapestry. I don't know if that what came through on this, but also a very distinguished ensemble.
Yeah. Got the pirate shirt.
Yeah.
Great Seinfeld episode. Fez from... from That 70s Show? What is this?
That was my fiance and I fart sandwiches. Aladdin? Yeah, I'm genie? Aladdin and she's the genie.
You guys like to dress up for Halloween?
We like to dress up for whatever reason or excuse that we can come up with.
Yeah. And your nephews are into skateboarding?
Yeah.
Are they professional?
He probably will be at some point. He's definitely got the balls and the yeah. ambition to become one. And really the skill set, too.
You film this?
I didn't film it. One of his buddies from Skate Church did.
And they sent you the video? Yeah, it's a cool slow-mo effect. It's awesome. And... this reminds me like of a comic book style almost. Do you like to read comics?
Yeah, I did a lot growing up.
What are some that you like?
I really liked the gory ones. So Tale from the Crypt, Dracula from the Tomb, Dracula Revisited, Swamp Thing, things of that nature. I really enjoyed the more of like the comic novels growing up. Yeah. I had a huge collection, which my mom's husband's nephew stole and sold.
Mm.
Motherfucker.
Did you read Preacher growing up?
I didn't read Preacher growing up, but I've been watching it on, what is that, FX, I think?
Yeah. Or AMC. Either one, but where were you coming back from on this trip in January?
I was going to New York.
New York. What were you doing over there?
Visiting some family and just kind of taking a walkabout inspiration trip. My fiance travels quite a bit for her job, and so if there's the opportunity for me to piggyback on her lodging on occasion, I'll try and make that happen. I lived out there for 5 years, and so if I get the chance to go back, I'll always take it. I love it out there.
Were you involved in this Art Students League?
I did go to the Art Students League, yes.
What would you do there?
Well, I did a couple things there. I attended classes, which, if you're not familiar with the Art Students League, it's a technique school. Mm. So they focus primarily on the development of your skill. You don't get a degree, you get a certificate. I didn't get the certificate, but I did go to classes quite often there. And, they also offer open studio classes for, I think, like $7 every day, where you can just go and view short poses and create work or long poses. So that was one thing I did there. And when I first moved out to New York, I was pretty, pretty broke, and I just wanted to be in the artistic environment. So at one point, I did model there for a few months.
Like a portrait model or life drawing?
It was mostly anatomy classes, naked.
Art modeling?
Yeah, naked modeling.
So life drawing stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, interestingly enough, now I had some guys, I probably shouldn't say what he pays, but it was funny because for only $15 more, you could do a life drawing pose. For portrait pose, it's like, it didn't seem worth it for the 3 hours just for an extra $15 to be completely naked or just the portrait pose sitting in a chair, you know?
I mean, it's it's not good money.
Yeah, it's not.
I think I was getting paid $15 an hour to be naked.
Yeah, it's even worse. That sounds about right. Yeah, that sounds about right.
Which by New York standards is shit money.
Yeah, by New York standards, you're right.
Yeah, but, you know, it did help me create a network. Some of the best people I met in New York were amongst that artist community, and some of the people who helped me to get through the tough time of not having money. We're through that artist community. I mean, these people really embraced me with open arms and fed me and showed me cheap eats throughout the city and helped me get my bearings when I was out there. So, I mean, the Art Students League of New York, I owe a lot of my ability to stay in New York just based off of the people I met there. It was one of the best experiences I had there. And mm-hmm. and that place is really reputable. You know, they train the likes of Jackson Pollock and Roy Lichtenstein and Mark Rothko, and the list goes on and on and on. They're an institution out there.
Nice. Did you ever submit your stuff to the Willamette Weekly or anything?
No, I haven't.
I don't know. It's like, I feel like I've seen this art style in that newspaper for some reason. Like, it would fit pretty well. I don't know if they even pay you for that. I don't know how it works as far as submitting art. Do you ever submit art anywhere?
Not really.
It's more of a hobby than commercial for you?
It's more of therapy, I think, for me. It's something that I've always done and I think will always do. And, you know, there was probably a small point in time in my life where I was like, oh, I want to make money off art. But I think that in that mindset, I got confused about what the art meant to me. Mm-hmm. And after living in New York and seeing how the average artist was at such a high caliber compared to other areas in this country, it made me sort of reassess what it was to me.
Yeah.
I could really give a shit about making any money off of it. And in most cases, I'll just give it away to people or I'll use it as currency and trade things for it. So this good friend of mine recently commissioned me to do this dog portrait and he traded me some snowboard gear for it. So, nice. I mean, on a level of success for me, that's pretty successful, I guess.
Nice. Did you ever end up finding Wendy's truck?
They did end up finding Wendy's truck. Wendy, I think, yeah, is her handle. They did.
Where? How?
I'm foggy on the details.
Yeah, you should call her and find out.
Yeah, I should.
Call her right now. Put her on the show. What are some of your favorite things to draw, like, in general? Pets, plants,
Portland. Yeah, all of the above.
Family.
I really have been on I'm in a dog portrait phase right now with my oil paintings in particular. I like to paint dogs in unlikely scenarios. So as a firefighter or a astronaut or a pilot.
Yeah. I've been watching a lot of World War II stuff. I've been fascinated by it, so this is catching my attention right now.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Basically just watched World War II in HD on Netflix, or on Amazon Prime.
In HD?
That's what it's called. It's called the World War II in HD, yeah.
And all that stuff and must have been remastered,
it's
right?
In color. They said it was like rare color footage, yeah. So they said they were searching for it for about 2 years, and they found it.
Wow.
And a lot of that stuff, they said, hadn't been released until recently. And a lot of it's really, they wouldn't have done that back then because it's like so graphic. But now you can put it on any streaming service as long as they approve it, you know. It's good to go. So
It's that graphic.
It's crazy graphic. They showed what happened at Saipan. I don't know if that's how you pronounce it. S-I-A-P-A-N. And, like, it was nuts. They showed somebody jumping off a cliff. It was crazy.
Gnarly.
But basically, they didn't show them land. They just showed, like, brush underneath. But they showed... they basically said 1,000 people committed suicide because their government brainwashed them into thinking that the Americans were going to hurt them, kill them, rape them, whatever. It's so crazy. I couldn't believe what I was watching.
It's like Wile E. Coyote just jumping off a cliff and then a puff of dust.
Yeah. They didn't even, like, all they did was just show someone jumping. So it's like, for all you know, they jumped into a pool, but still, it was crazy, you know?
Yikes.
And it was a far jump. It was like really far. And they were had on loudspeakers saying, like, don't believe it. Like, they had eventually had to get people from their own community to come on these loudspeakers and say, like, look, it's okay. They're actually going to give you food and shelter. And like, people eventually believed it, but a lot of them didn't.
Wow.
I know, man. And I was just thinking about the draft and how people are so lucky today.
Oh, yeah. Oof.
The selective service, the whole it's still a part of society, but like, it's like a weird thing. They're like, it's federally that you have to sign up for selective service, even though the draft is illegal. It's like a double negative or something. There's a catch 22 going on right now.
Yeah, they could implement that at any time, yeah, though, couldn't they? Yeah.
Yeah. That's why they're not getting rid of it completely, because they need some insurance in case. And not only that, I think it looks really bad if like other countries see, oh, they just completely eradicated their draft system.
Right.
Now we're going to hit them. You know, I just thought about that.
They don't have the manpower. Let's cut them off at their knees.
Yeah, you want the other country to know that the option of the draft is here. And if you do something, we're going to enable that.
Yeek.
Deploying to a foreign land. Can you imagine that? My grandparents both did this. I was reading the statistics, though, and it's like, all right, so when you get down to the nitty-gritty, I was like, okay, 1 million went, 7 million. 1 million saw action out of 7 million or something. And the infantry, if you're in the infantry, there's only a 15% chance of you getting killed. Like, I was, like, looking at all the statistics, and in my head, it's like, oh, you're going to go to war, you're going to die immediately. But if you look at the stats, you could actually survive.
Yeah, if you fall on the positive side of those stats.
But what I had thought was, like, 4 out of 5 chance you're going to get killed, but it's not as bad as that.
What did you break it down to, then? What was the actual percentage that you arrived at?
The actual percentage that I arrived at was there's probably only a 10 to 20% chance that you're going to get killed, which isn't that bad.
That's not too bad.
Yeah.
It's 10 to 20%.
Greater chances if you're in the infantry, but not everybody was in the infantry. So, and
right,
still, even if you're in the infantry, 15% chance. So it's like...
Right. And but they also probably sift through the more... physically able to go in the infantry, right?
So just don't be that. Don't
like,
be that.
If I'm falling behind and I'm always requesting water and I'm always hungry, then I'm probably gonna have a desk
don't
job.
Be a hero.
Don't be a hero.
Like John Bassel on that. How I got into that World War HD thing was I watched this other show, The Pacific, before that, and I watched Band of Brothers before that. I went on this huge tangent, and this dude John Bassel on. He wanted to be a hero. And so he went back into war after getting like medal, Purple Hearts and all this.
Oh.
Yeah, he went back in because
he was back
bored.
In.
He was bored of going around and promoting war bonds. He was like, this sucks. I want to be a hero again. Gets killed when he goes back in Japan. Japan was the worst place to go back.
Man.
You're better off in Germany and we're fighting Europe or whatever.
Yeah, don't be a hero.
Yeah.
Glory. Take your Medal of Honor and live out the rest of your life.
Exactly. Why did he have to get greedy?
Yeah.
He had his slice of 15 minutes and he wanted 30 minutes.
Yeah. He should have just taken it, as Bob Ross would say, as a happy accident.
Yeah, I agree. This reminds me of like cover art on a Judy Blume book in the 80s.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, no problem. Did you read any books growing up?
I was not a very ferocious reader growing up, but I read a ton of current affairs these days. Yeah, reading and writing was not my friend growing up.
Grateful Dead fan?
Not at all.
Guns N' Roses?
Absolutely.
They are my favorite band.
Guns N' Roses?
Yeah, growing up, like, they were the first band that really turned me on to music, I guess. As far as Slash's guitar solos and Axl Rose's voice, like, that's the pinnacle for me, man.
Yeah, that was definitely a very influential band in my life growing up. My cousin, who was living in L.A. at the time, who's a couple years younger than me, introduced me to them, and they were, like, the new hot shit in L.A., before any of their music videos, and you know, that was like the first time where I like coveted a band, you know, like, yeah. Oh, I knew them before they sold out.
That's awesome. Yeah, I remember talking to a guy who's like, I went to the first Metallica shows. It's always
first Metallica shows. Yeah. That's epic.
Yeah. So which show did you go to, like, early Guns N' Roses? Troubadour, or maybe at the Rainbow Room?
I actually never saw the Guns N' Roses live. My sister did, I think.
I played a Seattle show recently.
Yeah, I would, you know, I...
They're good to see live, and they're now still? They're back together. They're actually still pretty good to see live, yeah.
Hmm.
I'd recommend it. I mean, just to see Duff and Slash, even if Axl's... It's still good. It's just not what it... Nobody's voice is going to be as good as it was in there in their 20s.
And oh, certainly.
Especially something like that where they're screaming.
Yeah. I, you know, I think too, with Guns N' Roses, I don't like... I don't like Axl's politics, and so I think that's deterred me from going and seeing them live. That I'm a big fan of Bon Jovi's politics, but that was the first like band I saw live that I paid for the ticket.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Well, now that it's all good with the band members, you can forgive Axl.
Yeah, I don't know.
So you drew this with your iPad?
Yeah, my lady's best friend had an iPad when she was visiting, and she let me kind of just fool around.
Your first time drawing on an iPad?
Yeah.
That's amazing. I thought this was incredible.
Thank you.
It's awesome, man.
Yeah, and then fortunately, my dad got me an iPad for Christmas, and so now I'm trying to learn all the tricks of Procreate.
Yeah, I was going to say, is that the one you use? Because I asked some other artists that came on here, and they like to use that one, too. Is that, like, the standard?
Yeah, it gives you a lot of capabilities, and it directly works with Photoshop. Not that I'm really great at Photoshop either, but it has a lot of really, really cool features. There's a number of these different programs online, and I got another one that I can't remember the name of it. I think it's, like, Scenic Draw or something. And it didn't seem quite as seamless as Procreate, and it was only like $9 as opposed to Photoshop, which is significantly more per month.
And when you use Procreate, does it do that time lapse thing? That
yeah,
nice. So yeah. I guess it's just as easy as like hitting a button and
yep,
it just records everything you do step by step.
Yep. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
I guess it works based on like when you press the clicker or something. Is that?
Yeah, so there's a pen that you can use that has sort of like a sensitivity in the tip.
Yeah.
So you can actually use it like a pencil in the way that you can use the side of it, and it'll give you a different sort of texture and look. Or you can go directly on the point, and it'll be a little bit more fine. Line.
Mm. Do you prefer to use a stylus?
I'm sorry?
You use a stylus preferred to as opposed to fingers when you're using an iPad?
You know, on the iPad, I do prefer the pen, and I'm still kind of getting used to it. When I paint or draw, I in an analog fashion, I prefer to get my fingers really dirty and smudge stuff and use
work
my palm
it.
And
like a physical substance.
Totally.
You need that?
I
mean, it just makes it easier for you.
I think it's part of sort of the meditative process of like really getting my hands dirty and allowing for messes, you know, and in my daily life, most things are pretty organized. So it allows me that space to just kind of be.
You like to make a mess?
To make a mess and kind of be a little out of control. I typically will listen to a lot of different types of music when I'm painting too. So part of that comes straight through on the canvas.
Like, what do you think you're listening to for this one?
I was listening to a lot of different things on that one. I was listening to some R. Kelly. I was listening to some Frank Ocean, probably some Stevie Wonder. Nice. Definitely some Tupac, maybe some Bad Religion.
So you've watched those documentaries on Tupac and Biggie?
I have, yeah.
Great stuff. I can't stop. I always watch those.
I'm blown away at how many documentaries there's been pointing the fingers at cops and how out in the public that information is, but still nobody's been convicted.
It's true. Like, they're not reopening anything. Nothing.
Just that the police avoided a lawsuit from Biggie's mom. It's like,
yeah, and if you think about it, like, how is this phenomena any different than maybe it's not as big, but like the Kennedy assassination, people really care about this thing, you know?
Yeah. I mean, the Kennedys is a legacy. Fuck, man, that's a bummer.
Yeah,
to have that last name, it's like
seriously, like. What happened first with John and then Robert right after, like a couple years?
Robert and then...
And then the son with the plane?
Junior?
Yeah.
Who was just married and it was him and his wife, right? That went down in a helicopter or something?
He's like, he should have known. My last name's Kennedy. I shouldn't be a pilot.
Yeah, no. I should not fly and I should not have a convertible.
Unless in his head he's like, this is just like Oedipus the King. Like, it doesn't really matter what I do.
So yeah, it's just going to happen.
If I don't die in this plane, it's going to go out with a bang.
Well, and he was like really handsome and really articulate. He had like all of he was the triple threat.
Yeah, you know, he was like, I'm not going to go into politics. I'm not going to get killed.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, you are.
Yeah.
You're still a risk taker.
Just because... You have an option. We're going to cut you out of the equation.
You didn't piss off people this time, but you pissed off Mother Nature. Yeah, I don't know.
The Kennedys cannot win.
Seriously. It's like she saw him flying through the air. And she's like, Mother Nature's like, full gust of wind at his plane right now.
Bye.
Take care of this Kennedy. What does he think he's doing?
Who does he think he is?
Like, imagine the other Kennedys right now. They're like terrified. They're like, I'm not going to leave the house.
Yeah.
This is messed up.
Bummer, guys.
Seriously. Another thing your painting reminds me of is God of War. But you're not a gamer. But looks like just like Kratos from God of War. When he's a father, too.
I'm not familiar.
Oh, yeah. He got a beard.
But part of that painting that you're just looking at there is my 40th birthday happened right before I started that painting, and my cousin had some He-Man wrapping paper that his mom had saved for 20 years. It was that wrapping paper collage there is from 1984.
Okay.
And so I used part of that, and there's those little orange and white cylinder looking things there, because all of that is glassed in a resin.
Mm-hmm.
And I have type 1 diabetes and with type 1, well, with diabetes, there's a lot of waste and biohazard stuff. And I've always tried to sort of think of a way that I could incorporate that into my painting without being like, hey, look at these needles. Because I think it gives sort of maybe the wrong intended perspective of the use of that debris.
Yeah.
And so those are the end caps of needles.
Oh, yeah, I didn't even notice that until you pointed out. Nice. And it says you checked in at Alive MMA Portland for that one. What's that about?
What's that?
It says you checked it at MMA Portland, Alive MMA Portland. Was that just a random check-in?
Yeah, because it's right down the street from my house.
Yeah, I've done that before, too. At the Lansu Chinese Garden, I've checked in there. do you ever do any sculptures?
I've only, on very rare occasion. I have the hopes that I'll spend more time in sculpture at some point, but, I just haven't yet.
Yeah.
I've been saving a bunch of, corks from wine bottles that I think someday I'll do some sort of, sculpture with and incorporate it like a skin tone or something, but
yeah,
you know, that for old sure. time thing.
Let me see, anything else you want to talk about?
I don't know,
we covered most of it.
Yeah, covered a lot.
Let's get back to depression. Right, there was something I saw earlier, it was like, but I don't remember. Let's see. What's your favorite superhero?
Oh, favorite superhero. I go back and forth between Batman and Spider-Man. Growing up, it was Superman because that was the first one I saw in the theater. Okay. And then when Batman came out, the Tim Burton Batman came out, and the Dark Knight series came out in comic books, I think that kind of solidified my love for Batman because of their portrayal of this like very dark, tormented character who, unlike other superheroes, is, you know, mortal. He can be killed, and so his ambition to be strong, and of course the toys are cool and stuff, but you know, he had to go through all the training to become so, as opposed to Superman, who, you know, comes from a different planet and it's a little less relatable.
It's true, everything's less relatable with Superman.
Yeah.
Except Clark Kent stuff, I guess.
Yeah. It's all an act, though.
Yeah. And you're a big Anthony Bourdain fan?
Yeah. Yeah. I really appreciate where he came from, you know. I spent a lot of time working out in food service and New York, and that is a really, really labor intensive job, especially as a chef, to do continuously, and it's rare that chefs make a lot of money, and so to
to make $3.35 million to get his condo, which is now for sale.
Right? Yeah, well, but he had humble beginnings, you know. He was a chef out there, and it was only when he wrote that book, exposing sort of the lifestyle of being a chef and whatnot, that he gained notoriety. And you know, out in New York, when I bartended out there, I mean, that is a rough life to live continuously, because you're And really, before you even know it, it states so in your ads or in the ads that restaurants post. They post must have New York experience. And when I would apply for jobs out there, at first I was like, what the fuck's up with New York experience? Why do you gotta have New York experience? And then very soon after getting a job, I realized what New York experience entails.
Yeah.
It entails being really busy for many, many hours on your feet with probably some of the most taxing consumer base you can experience in a customer service job. And as a bartender, you serve until 4 a.m. So you're leaving at, you know, 5, sometimes 7 a.m, depending on how busy a night that you had and what kind of side work or counting of tips you have to do. And, mad respect for that guy.
Yeah, it's his apartment. His life seemed on the outside pretty amazing. But apparently, when he loses the love of his life, he's like, I'm done. You know, none of this is worth anything.
Oh, yeah.
And it's amazing. I can't believe that.
It's tragic.
He wasn't even alone when he was traveling. He was with his friend Eric Rippert. So I can't believe he did that when, like, his friend didn't show up to dinner or breakfast. Like, I couldn't do that to someone else. Like I could... Like, it's unbelievable. There was a guy, like, waiting for him. Like, I can't... That seems, like, really selfish.
Yeah, I agree.
I could see, like, from the celebrity perspective, you're like, well, everybody loves this guy. But it's like, well, there was a guy, like, actively waiting for him.
Yeah, I agree. That is very selfish. But, you know, mental health issues are a real thing. And although he had a lot of people around him, I would imagine... coming from where he did, that you always question your relevance when you get to be that famous.
Yeah. Definitely.
Or who's, you know, like who's really on your side, you know, a lot of those people have their own interests in mind and elbowing up to a celebrity.
I know, the friend that he was traveling with said something that got on his nerves.
Or maybe he was fucking his girl. Who knows? You know, like,
yeah, maybe that's what, yeah. Good point. Well, that seems like a
great... You heard it here. We figured it all out.
Have you ever been out of country so we don't end it on that note?
Yeah. Yeah, I've been out of the country quite a few times. Canada, easy. Been to Mexico a couple few times. Costa Rica.
All right. What was your favorite food in Mexico and favorite food in New York?
Oh... let's see. Favorite food in New York. I think was consistently a place called Roberta's, which is in Bushwick. It's named as a pizza house, but it has a variety of different foods. Also this bar called Basic, which I was a pretty regular staple at their bar top. They have great cocktails and a pretty modest menu, but effective. They do like elaborate hot dogs and stuff like that. Mm. The Brooklyn Star is also a really fantastic restaurant that I would go to pretty often. They have made-to-order Louisiana cooking. Mama Fuku Sandbar is also a very, very good restaurant. And then in Mexico, you know, honestly, in Mexico, it's as simple as street tacos, like really well-done street tacos. I love that you could just get really fresh fish tacos on, you know, just about everywhere you travel there.
So I feel your pain on, since you've been in New York, you've obviously tried bagels, pizza, and deli sandwiches and Chinese food. So feel your pain on that one.
Yeah. I mean, there's some, and dumplings. There's some epic dumpling places that are just so cheap and so unassuming. Noodle like houses. I mean, anything you want.
Ramen's awesome, yeah.
Dude, ramen there
to
is...
Even get a spring roll here, get an egg roll there, and you can't tell me the difference.
Yeah. The options are just never ending out there.
Yeah, the melting pot. Can't beat it. For sure. Well, thanks for coming in.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, definitely. Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Goodbye.